This week's pundit is our largely libertarian head of research at the New Zealand Institute, actually New Zealand Initiative. Sorry about that, Eric. Eric Crampton. Kia ora, Eric.
Good evening.
Welcome back to tonight's social impact bombs. They've been in the news recently.
Yeah, they have been.
On a few blog sites, left-wing blog sites saying, oh, it's no good. Right-wing blog sites saying, oh, they're not a bad idea. But I don't even know what they are because nobody's really explained that to me very clearly.
Sure. Social impact bonds are a new kind of policy that started in the UK around 2010 and has started spreading around the world. There's more than 100 of these things now being trialed. The basic idea is that for some kinds of services where you want to contract with a non-governmental provider for an outcome rather than an output, so the difference would be like in health, you might want to contract for a health outcome rather than just for a number of surgeries, for example. If you want to contract for an outcome, and the service provider doesn't have the starting capital to do it, you get investors in to provide that starting capital to the extent that they're able to improve outcomes for the group that's targeted, and the government has to be very careful in setting up those contracts at the start to make sure they're monitoring it properly and that they're getting the outcomes that they want. If they're able to achieve those outcomes, then the government provides a return to the investors. They pay out that way. The investors cover the costs of the service provider in the first place. They get paid out for the outcomes that are provided, and the clients have better outcomes.
Okay. Well, let's go back a bit. Now, so say a provider, an NGO, a non-government organization of some form is saying, oh, I can do this service. We can do this service. We can run this hospital X, but we don't have any capital. So the government says, okay, well, we'll provide you the capital with a social investment social impact bond. But I'm thinking, well, why not cut out that and just have the government running the hospital, which is what we normally have, or that has been the model in public provision for quite some time. Why wouldn't you do that in the first place?
Well, it depends on the kind of service. If you were talking about something like the hospitals, maybe it worked. Well, we currently have a mix of public and private hospitals. But for other more innovative services where you really want to harness local expertise from those who are specialists in the area rather than just relying on the public service for service delivery, we already contract with the charitable and non-governmental sector for all kinds of different services. We just don't have a very good way of measuring outcomes in a lot of those cases. Moving more of those towards outcome-based contracting can be a really good way of making sure that we're getting value for money in these and that the clients are being well served. The investor component comes where the service provider doesn't have the capital to do it itself, where you want there to be sort of an at-risk component, because if the government just handed over the money to do it, there's a little less incentive to keep an eye on the ball and make sure that you're providing the outcomes. Right. The investors can also provide a bit of expertise, not just in sort of commercial matters and making sure that they're bringing a bit of business sense to how they're running things, but also in selecting which projects are going to be viable. So imagine like a venture capitalist who's being pitched with 100 different ideas for IT startups. He's got to select across these of which ones are going to be viable, where the people know well enough how to make it work, and put his money into that one. If we have the same thing going on in the social service provision sector, the investors are helping to triage across the different projects and which ones are going to be viable or not for achieving the kinds of outcomes that the government thinks are useful.
So you have a whole lot of people with different ideas competing, and hopefully that produces, A, you've got a better range of choice in terms of the government funder, and B, maybe that competition ups their game as well.
Well, that's
that kind of idea.
Yeah, that's what we hope for in the long run.
Now, the other thing, however, is that the reason you at the initiative think that this approach is good is because you think that, to some extent, social services, when they're operated by, well, whoever operates them, let's say we're talking about government social services, it is hard to measure the outcomes. But I was thinking about this and thinking, well, hang on, if you're running the health service and you're thinking, well, the idea is we want a healthy nation, well, you can measure that, can't you? If there's fewer people turning up sick or fewer people going to hospital, then you can tick yourself on the box. You're doing good.
Oh, sure. Right now, though, we tend to contract with the hospitals and the DHBs for things like the number of hip replacements or the number of surgeries that they're going to provide, and politicians will crow about the number of surgeries that they were able to fund this past year. That's paying for outputs. If we switch things around instead towards a more outcome-based measure, well, how healthy are people? Get some decent measures of that.
Maybe I should stop you there. What do you mean by output and outcome? Because sure. A lot of people might say, particularly people with gummy hips right now, yeah. An outcome and where I've got a better hip and I can walk around, well, that's great. And that is an outcome. It's not an output. It's an outcome for me. I can walk again.
Sure. Well, I'll distinguish it more in the kind of case that the government is currently trialing. They're looking at a social investment bond in employment placement for those who've been in mental health services. So not people who are in institutions, but who are being treated by their GPs. An output-based contract would pay somebody to provide employment counseling to one of their clients, and it wouldn't really be keyed to whether anybody actually got a job at the end of it. So you'd be paid so much per visit for however many visits, and that's an output-based contract. An outcome-based contract as well. If you're able to achieve a 40 or a 50% job placement rate, you're going to get a really good return for that. That's paying for outcomes rather than outputs, and it helps ensure a sharper focus on what works rather than just getting a bum on the seat.
I mean, I understand that more if I think about a bureaucracy and, say, a ministry which has the job of advising, providing policy advice, where it might be the number of reports is a sign of somebody doing a good job, but that doesn't really measure the quality of advice. And I don't know how you measure that, apart from the government getting it right and getting re-elected because it got it right, but it might get kicked out because it did the right thing.
Well, you'd hope that voters would reward parties for having presided over more successful outcomes, but voters aren't particularly good at discerning the difference often between overall international circumstances and what might be something the government should take a little more blame for. But that's a little beside the point on this one. Here, if this were to work correctly and we had decent measures of outcomes rather than outputs, you'd have fewer of these bureaucratic reports needing to be written because we'd know how to measure things. We'd be watching what's successful, triaging out the ones that didn't and the ones that didn't work and pursuing with the ones that were successful.
If we take the social impact bond approach to this, which is what's being considered with mental health,
yep.
Getting people with mental health problems back into the workforce, right?
Yep.
That's the aim.
Yep.
But why would that approach be better? I mean, you could still say, let's forget about outputs in terms of how many counselling sessions we managed to give these clients, these mm-hmm. mental people with mental health, with mental illness. You could just say, right, well, what we really want to do is get these people back into work and self-reliant again.
Yep.
You could change that. You don't have to change the model in terms of how that's done to still focus on that outcome, do you?
It depends where you think the expertise lies in helping people back into employment. So if you think that the non-governmental sector and charities have a pretty good track record in dealing with some of their clients in those areas, and you want to enable them to provide those services because they know what's going on there, but they don't have the money to run the system in the first place, you need either to be providing them some upfront funding, which worsens the incentives around outcomes, or you can rely on the investors to come in to help you to triage across these different potential providers, as well as provide some business acumen to help make sure that they're running things on a sound basis. It's the latter one that they're trying out here. It looks like it could be successful, but a lot will depend on contract details that haven't yet been released. I don't think that's coming out until August or September.
Now, if they're called bonds, it immediately suggests to me that there's going to be some kind of return on investment. Because, you know, when you yep. I take out a bond, I'm expecting, say, I invest X amount of money, you know, in some kind of bond. When that bond matures, I'm going to want 3 or 4% on top of that. 4% if I'm lucky right now, probably more like 2.5 or 3%. So I assume when the government, how does this work in terms of a social impact bond? Who's getting the return
sure.
on investment?
Oh, the people who invested in the social impact bond, and it's really a terrible name for it because it's not really a savings instrument, but it's the name that they came up with in the UK, and everybody in the world's been stuck with it since then.
Okay. What would you prefer?
In the States, they sometimes call it pay for success.
Pay for success. Oh, well.
But the ones who earn the return on investment are the investors who back the project in the first place, and so it's them whose money is at risk. So they could lose everything if they aren't successful in providing the outcomes.
Which might be a government department, a health provider, say.
Wouldn't it be neat if we could get into a world where parts of the bureaucracy were bidding against private providers to provide outcomes that we that the government cares about, and if the state is the best provider of it, they'd be able to get the contracts. If non-governmental sector is better at it, let them have it.
Is it also possible that it wouldn't just be the government? Say in the case of mental health services that provides the capital.
Yep.
In this case?
So this is something that we went through. Janessa Jerram and Bryce Wilkinson wrote a report for us on this that we released in the last month called Investing for Success. There are a couple of areas where we think New Zealand could do particularly well once this matures a little more. So we've got a more developed crowdfunding structure for equity than in a lot of places. So in the States, it'd be very hard to raise equity through a crowdfunding mechanism, or at least it's more recent that's come in.
And that's just a private thing through the internet.
Yeah. So Pledge Me Here could work for that. If you've got a local community that knows that some social service provider is really doing some good work, if you set it up that an arm of Treasury could say, yeah, the government is willing to pay for this kind of an outcome because we think that it reduces long-term fiscal costs and that it's good for the country, then that provider could go to Pledge Me or something like it and say, look, we want to put up a social impact bond there to fund us to provide this service. And if we are able to deliver, then you're going to get a return on it. I would love to see that kind of thing be able to emerge.
On top of what the government was either prepared or able to spend on that service.
Well, yeah, so there's a couple of ways of running that, and then you've got a good point there. You could have it set up with Treasury providing them evaluation of whether they'd be willing to pay for an outcome, or you could have a philanthropist do it. We've got a lot of great philanthropists in this country, and sometimes they'll have a hard time telling which project to back in an area they care about. If you imagine, again, going to something like Pledge Me, where investors could decide which of the social service providers would be the best one to achieve the outcome that the philanthropist cares about, then the philanthropist could provide the return to those investors. I would love to see that kind of thing emerge as well.
In the case of mental health services, I'm trying to imagine this, the government, maybe other providers as well, other funders could get involved and provide money to XYZ counselling and work placement services or whatever it might be called. But how are they going to pay back 4%? How do they actually get that return?
Oh, well,
where are they going to get the money from?
If the government is backing it, then the money comes from the government. So right now, a mental health client who's not been able to transition into work is going to cost the government something like $180,000 over his or her lifetime. If they are able to transition that person successfully into work, well, that liability goes away. There's going to be some ongoing other costs, but that part of it's going to be gone. So you can afford to provide a return to investors because of the savings on these other areas.
But is the provider giving you your return on investment? If I invest in this myself, where's my 4%?
It's coming from the government.
It's coming from the government.
Yeah.
The government will provide that. But this is where I'm slightly confused, but I thought the government was putting in the money in the first place.
No.
How can you put the money in?
Providers put in the money in the first place. So say that you invest $1,000 in it, a bunch of other people each put in $1,000. If they make their outcome, you get your $1,000 back plus an 8 or 10% return depending on whatever the contractual terms are they come up with and how well the provider was able to improve the outcomes that they were seeking. If they weren't able to improve those outcomes, well, you're going to lose some of that $1,000 and maybe all of it depending, again, on how they set up the contracts in the first place.
But the provider, the government's putting money in. But
at the end. Yeah. The government is only putting money in at the end, after the service has been provided and after they've seen whether it's been successful. Up until that point, it's the investors whose money is at risk.
Right. But that investor might well be the government.
That's not the point of social impact bonds. The government could be the one who's providing the return on the investment at the end, but they are unlikely to be one of the initial backers. They might take an initial bit of a stake to get things moving, and we've seen a bit of that abroad, but it should be out of the private sector.
Well, what has happened in Britain?
In Britain, the first one that came out was the Peterborough Prison Social Impact Bond. They were there able to reduce prisoner recidivism rates by just under 9%, which wasn't quite enough to trigger the payment to investors, but was showing some decent promise because they were showing better and better results over time. Then the government went and changed policy on it and rolled out a lot of the changes that the Peterborough experiment was running itself across the whole country. So all of a sudden, you didn't have a way of measuring anymore whether it was successful because everybody else had taken on a lot of these successful parts of it. So you've had critics here kind of damning the Peterborough model because they didn't pay out to investors, but it was successful enough that the government grabbed the ideas and rolled it out more broadly.
And the government, who was provided the initial capital to get the thing going?
Investors provided the initial capital.
Private investors?
Yes, yes.
And then the return, once the things were, well, in this case, they weren't achieved to the sufficient degree. But if I had been, who would have provided the return?
The government.
Right.
Yeah. And the government...
Through the savings that they made because the service was better, they say, right, yep, now we can give you 3% on top of what...
It'd probably be a little more than 3% because it's... A government bond isn't risky. Whether your program is able to reduce the recidivism rates substantially is more risky, and investors demand a higher return based on risk. But there was a payment that was triggered because the government had violated some of the terms of the contract where they rolled it out very quickly, so investors did get a little bit back on that.
Eric, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thank you.
Eric Crampton, Head of Research for the New Zealand Initiative, back with more largely libertarian thoughts in a couple of months.